systematic change, but also just changing someone's heart.
Yeah.
What do you find through all of these different experiences is the most powerful?
Prejudice, discrimination, and racism, right? And they're three different things.
Yeah.
Right? If we're prejudiced, you know, you want to be around people you want to be around.
Yeah.
Discrimination is now I'm acting on that.
Yep.
Racism is when you take that and you institutionalize it.
Right.
And then you make it into a law. So now if you change the structure, slavery's done. Jim Crow's done. But no one dealt with the heart of it.
Yeah.
That said, damn, we probably should have never done that.
It's
that
like America's a bunch of dry drunks. Have you ever heard that term?
That's exactly what it is.
Where it's
you're still an alcoholic.
You're still a narcissistic asshole. You just happen to be sober right now.
I didn't think God would like me, so I didn't like people who like God. People who would use God to tell me what a bad person I was, and I was like, I don't need God for that. I tell myself I'm a bad person all the time. Sometimes we feel like we don't belong. Sometimes we feel like no matter how hard we try, we will never be good enough. But we still try. Together, broken and battered. So misfits, outcasts, chronic screw-ups, clinically depressed, weirdos, and Christians who don't fit inside the box. The show is for everyone trying to get better. The show is for me. So get comfortable and meet us in the back room.
Now you gotta be my friend, dude.
Yeah, I have to.
Jesus was pulled into that.
Bad, bro. Shit, man.
That's how I want to make all my friends now.
Friends on me. Just kidding.
Nope.
I pray in the name of Jesus that you become friends.
Are we recording?
We are recording.
I said, good, keep it. This is the intro. Welcome to the back row, everybody. My name is Jamie Kilstein. I'm a comedian. I'm a writer. I have depression, anxiety, and if you feel like you don't fit in, you're in the right space. I love, that was the best opening of a show, I think, we've ever had. You have been bullied by the Lord, Jesus Christ, into being my friend. I was going to introduce you professionally. We'll figure that all out.
Okay.
As I was running through my head, like, you know, rapper, poet, host, all that stuff, I almost used the word activist, and I realized that I didn't know if you were or if that's in a bio. And in the moment, I had this realization that I use the word activist with anyone who talks about politics and just isn't a shithead, like who seems like a nice person,
because
the bar is so low.
Pretty low.
That I'm essentially just equating you with, you know, activist instead of just political commentator, which sounds like I get like MSNBC or
sounds
Tucker Carlson
tool-y.
Vibe. It's a little tooly.
Activist was a it was on a bio at some point.
It was.
Yeah,
I think it was for me too.
but I often say like, yeah, activism plays many, many different like shapes and roles. And I think, you know, being the part of like moving from like the foot soldier to like the sage is an important part. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But like activism, as we oftentimes think of it in terms of like direct action, you know, writing picket signs in the front of the things. To me, I'm like, that's for the young knees.
Yeah.
You know, that's a young man sport.
Yes.
You feel me? So like, you know, I got kids now.
Right.
You know, so I think you can still continue to be like a part of, you know, pushing good things forward.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But for, like I said, from a sage, you know, standpoint,
dude,
you know what I'm saying?
I'm glad you said that, because I wrestle with that, because I used to be out in the streets. You know, we were talking about Quali when I met him. It was at Occupy Wall Street.
Word.
But also I was in my 20s and it was all about me, and I can say that reflecting back on it.
Totally.
At the time, I wasn't just like, you know, how I'm gonna get chicks, Occupy Wall Street.
I know, right?
but like, it was very like, how much was I thinking about the poor people struggling? When did I actually talk to a homeless person, or was I just blasting out on Twitter, you know, hey, here's me, you know, yelling at a cop or whatever?
Yeah.
And now, I have not followed politics. It was just my little baptism treat to me. Since I've become a Christian, I just stopped reading the news.
Sheesh.
And I feel Easily.
Must be nice.
It's the best. It's the kindest I've ever been. It's the happiest I've ever been. It's, I think, the most politically active way, in the sense that on the ground, talking to people in needs, blah, blah, blah. But at what point does that become apathetic? Because in my head, I'm like, you know what? I'm influencing people to be nice. Mm-hmm. That seems like a way bigger political stance than when I was like angrily tweeting Ted Cruz.
Yeah. Dude, you said so much right now that like there's so many ways to take this.
Hit it all.
I think it's, I mean, if I could let this thing fly
here.
Do it. I think there's definitely the, first of all, American Western Evangelical Christian. That's not even 10% of what Christianity is globally.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And then of that 10%, you're talking white Western American evangelical, you know what I'm saying? An even smaller percentage. And they don't have to watch the news.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, my father was a Black Panther.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So my understanding of politics and justice, don't get me wrong, I was 20 and angsty and ragey and was convinced that I was gonna do, me and the homies was gonna fix the problems. You know what I'm saying? That my daddy and them couldn't figure out. You know what I'm saying? And you learn quickly that, like, there's, you know, I even have a song about it, like, yo, the personal's political, and that your first protest is your own. Like, you have to fix here first. You know what I'm saying? But this comes from going out there, being disillusioned because the empire always strikes back. You know what I'm saying? And then just realizing that, like, no, you're a part of a continuum, a narrative arc of justice. I'm playing my role in here. You know, I'm sowing my seeds, and I'm going to pass this on to the next generation. You know what I'm saying? But I think, I would say that, like, again, I come from a tradition where, you know, Dr. King was a pastor. Like, so our politics, justice, and faith was never something that we could disentangle because of the nation we lived in. So that being said, that's not partisan, you know what I'm saying? Like, which I think for me is the thing that fueled the rage, you know what I'm saying, is the partisan parts about it, because like I mean I currently think Ted Cruz is a tool,
sure,
you know what I'm saying? Right? But I'm not gonna tweet him, like,
right,
for what, bro? You know what I'm saying? So I think that, like, that's the part that I would say my faith, my understanding, a longer view of history has allowed me to be able to understand the news with a temperate heart.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Well, and that also, the tweeting has to do with ego, right?
Absolutely.
Like, if I tweet at Ted Cruz that he's a tool, he's not going to be like, man, I got to reevaluate my policies.
I really
got to
think about my life.
No. I handled that grid situation terribly. Like, it was for me to look good. And
for sure.
What I realized is once I stopped being partisan, the reason that I've become more centrist on some issues or even like more conservative on some issues isn't because I was like, well, I'm 40 now and that's the law.
Yeah.
It's because I've met for the first time in my life conservatives who are cool, Christians who are cool, libertarians who are cool. I still have liberal friends who are cool. And the commonality that all of those people have are that they're willing to talk to the other side. That's what I've found will, even if I disagree with your politics, it's like, if you're just willing at this, in this day and age, just to have a friend who votes differently than you. And if you want to convince, if you're super on the left and you want to convince conservatives, I'm going to say that, like, calling them a Nazi at every step probably isn't going to convince them. Right.
For sure.
Whereas if they see that you are compassionate, you're kind, you care about your family, if you see that this conservative is compassionate and kind and cares about their family, I'm so much more willing to listen to why you vote a certain way.
Yeah. Yeah. If we can exist in the same universe of, you know, of reality and being able to understand, like you said, surely this person across from me desires that their children are fed well, and hopes that you would want the same. And of course, I don't wish ill on my neighbor. Like, of course I don't. You know what I'm saying? If we can, like you said, if we can come to that place, I think the hardest part, again, like, I'm speaking as like a disenfranchised minority, like, you know, in the royal sense, not maybe not necessarily specifically me, because people have had it much worse than I have.
Sure.
But like, I think when you, the hardest part is when, if we're legislating or discussing the legitimacy of my personhood,
yep,
like not what I think, but is it okay that I'm here?
Right.
I'm like, okay, that's a whole different story. Like, right. That's a non-starter.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So I think, and this is, like you said, coming from any partisan position, I cannot come to the table thinking, if you supported this person, if you vote like this, you shouldn't be here. Like, right. I can't, well, you are here. I'll push you even further here.
Yeah.
Have you read, this is a great read. It was called What is Justice?
No.
Michael Sandel.
Yeah.
Right. And
edit it out and say that I've read it, please.
Go on. Of course you did. Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is a synopsis.
Mr. Sandow.
Yeah. So this is just a synopsis of what he already knows.
Yeah.
This is for y'all.
Thank you. Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Nah. There. So he has this book where he describes, however you answer that question, what is justice?
Yeah.
A lot of times will help us understand or help you know why a person falls somewhere politically. So he gives this example. He's like, if you believe justice is the greatest amount of good for the most amount of people.
Okay.
Right. So, which means we're not all going to get everything what we want,
yep.
But can we serve the best we can do, yeah, for the most amount of people?
Yeah.
Okay. If that's your view of justice, oftentimes you're going to fall more towards the left, where there's like bigger programs, social safety nets.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You raise the bottom by elevating the top. So if it's a universal basic income, at least we eliminated poverty. Okay. Yeah. We're all paying a little more in our taxes,
sure,
but look, we're serving the best. This is not the best school I could possibly get, but you know, they need to eat too. You know,
yeah,
what I'm saying? So the greatest amount of good for the most amount of people, then you're going to lean more towards that side. Then you have somebody that would say, justice is the freedom to flourish without hindering.
Okay.
Just leave me alone.
Yep.
I'm going to make a decision. Again, surely, trust me, I don't want my neighbors to die.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And if I'm hungry and they're starving, that actually hurts me because I'm incentivizing them.
Yep.
So trust, I'm going to do the right
everyone
thing.
Everyone be cool.
Everybody be cool. Yep. And I'm not a monster.
Right.
Right. Those are your more libertarian stuff where it's like, just leave me alone, dog.
Yeah.
Like, I don't like, it's unjust for you to hinder my ability to, yeah, flourish. Right. And then there's this the other version that says justice is attaining a level of virtue that is defined by outside of us.
Okay.
Right. So that that right is something that exists in the universe, mm, that is just. And we need to pursue that and submit ourselves to what that thing is, mm, not our lived experience,
yep,
but what this thing is above us. Those are usually more your conservative things, that culture is supposed to look like,
yep,
this, you know? So, and if culture's not that, then it's our job to adjust.
Right.
Right. And that's what is just, because it's above us. So he lays that out, and then he goes out these different examples of how we're all approaching the same issue right now. Everybody's talking about affirmative action. All right, so if that's what we're talking about, if your view of justice is leave me alone to flourish, right, then obviously you're like, well, what's this? Why would you do this affirmative action thing? Why don't you just let me flourish? Like,
right,
let me show and prove. You know, right, what I'm saying? If your understanding of justice is the greatest amount of good, you're like, well, nah, fam, like, You got a boys club here. You know, right, what I'm saying? Like, this, you're not even like, it's better for society if we all had access, you know what I'm saying? So,
yeah,
so those sort of things, I know in a lot of my political conversations, having to hear what someone was saying, listen well enough to be like, that's what you mean by justice. Right.
Well, what's interesting is the way you described those three things, they all sounded good. It's once you get politics, politicians,
totally,
all that shit involved, because those three, like, usually when you hear, there's always going to be like a bias, right? When you hear someone describe, like, liberals are the ones who care about everyone and conservatives are monsters. Okay,
yeah,
which one are you? It's like,
yeah,
well, all right. But the way you described it, it's like, and this is what I'm trying to see in everybody, where it's, yeah, those three descriptors,
mm-hmm,
none of them were overtly, you know, none of them were overtly like, your sense of justice is that whites run everything, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
that's,
yeah,
bad. But all three of those have the potential to get so bastardized.
Yeah,
right?
They have shadows.
Like, we're even seeing like the left push some stuff that's sort of so crazy that it's actually it's bringing everyone back. It's pushing more people to the right. And I think a lot of that has to do with just social media and dialogue. It's just the way we talk about things, the way we blast people who disagree. Mm-hmm. We just assume that the other side are monsters. But at the same time, besides being Hawaiian, but I don't look it, I'm like a white dude. Yeah. So I do wonder, I call myself out sometimes where I'm sort of like, well, I remember back when I was like calling myself such a good ally, like, did I really give a shit, or was I just doing it because it was the popular thing to do and I was in my 20s? But now, am I running a different kind of problem by being like, hey man, I don't need to read the news because like we're all one? It's like, well, right, that's easy to say because like I'm probably not going to get like shot for being in my neighbor's front yard. Yeah. Right. And so, but at the same time, I know I'm being a better person, but what is that line? Because you know, when I called myself an ally, it was pretty fucking insufferable. But
no, I feel you. I know a few of them.
Can you talk about that?
The there's a lot of, like, the performative you know kind of situation. We just actually watched a episode of Atlanta about that. It's so brilliant,
good, dude. It's so
when
good.
This poor Asian lady, it's like season three, this poor Asian lady was like, oh, I thought you were hitting on me because a lot of black guys hit on me, you know? And I took I'm watching it took no offense. Yep. And I'm like, yeah, okay.
When they get like that,
she's cute. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, I dated Filipino girls. You know what I'm saying? Like, my wife's Mexican person. Yep. I get it. So like,
And they just get that like Dutch army of white people to like track her down. They're like, so good.
Racist, bro. Fucking racist. And he was like, dog, it's cool.
That whole season was crazy.
It's brilliant. Yeah. But yeah, so there's definitely that, you know, and that's something to even, I mean, there's even quotes from Malcolm X being like, be careful of the white liberal.
Right.
Like, they, you know, they tell you they on your side, fam. But like, you got to be careful from that, because it's what's so insidious about the nature of color-based institutional racism is like, even because it's just in the water. So even when you're trying not to be, you kind of are being, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
But I do think, I think to your point, to where you're like, you know, the shadow sides of these things, because it's like, the shadow sides of the greatest amount of good is like, if I can run through those shadows, it's almost like, if you have a problem with it, you just got to shut up because everybody's look, it's the best we could do. Shut up. You know what I'm saying? Well, no, bro. Like, I'm, you know what I'm saying? So there's that. And then, you know, obviously on the libertarian side, I'm like, if we'd have just left y'all alone, I mean, the civil rights movement was because, you know what I'm saying? Why the slavery was ended was because we had to make you do that. You feel me? So I can't just leave you alone because you ain't going to choose for me.
I think it's if people could just be honest about the flaws in their own side.
Exactly.
Right? Like, because there's a lot of libertarian stuff I agree with because the government sucks.
Me too. I don't trust the government. Yeah. I would totally love. There's a section in a book I wrote where I'm like, dude, if it wasn't for racism, I'd be a complete libertarian. If it wasn't for racism, I'd be a libertarian.
That's so good.
I agree, man.
Yeah.
I even think too, like, you know, to finish this thought, like, you know, for the more conservative view, the greatest amount of good thing, or not the greatest amount of good, the version of what is virtuous, at that point, that's where I feel like now you're arguing the legitimacy of the person. Like, why is this trans issue such a big deal to you? Like, why can't you just see that they have rights? Because in that world, you don't think they should exist. There should be no such thing as trans. Like, if you're believing that a man is a man, as a girl is a girl, so why am I, you're not arguing my rights. You're not arguing their rights. You're arguing their existence. Well, and that, to me, again, like you said, that's the bastardized thing. Yeah. You want everybody to shut up. You don't want to be held accountable, right? Right. And, which is the libertarian part where I'm like, you need to be held accountable for your choices, bro. Yeah. You can't just do what you want.
Well, and then the left is saying, if the left is refusing to admit that the government is
a problem,
and they're just like, no, Biden's fine. It's like, is he? Is it, are we saying that? Are we going to go with that? And that so then that automatically a, to the right and to libertarians, or, I mean, honestly, most of my friends who are like kind of apathetic, tiptoe, get their news from Instagram and stuff, you know, like the, my like UFC fighter friends or jiu-jitsu guys or they're ending up just more on the right because the left is just not honest with what's happening. Whereas the way I always looked at it, and I'm one of the only things I sort of stand by with my old politics is I would, if I didn't like when George Bush droned a wedding, I don't like when Obama drones a wedding. Facts. If I don't like when Clinton's a creep to women, you shouldn't like when Trump's a creep to women. Yeah, and it should just, if we could all call our own sides out.
If you just call bullshit, bullshit. Yeah. That's, I mean, like, let's be honest, like, Joe Biden's a large cheese pizza, dude. Like, yeah, just, you, this is the most, this is the most khaki beige, like, just consolation prize.
Right. Well, and then, and then when the left just blindly sticks up for him, then the right gets to paint him as sort of like, oh, he's like this Noam Chomsky, you know, whatever. And it's like, is he? Again, it's like the majority of humans I meet on the right, on the left, apolitical, are, like you said, they're decent.
Yeah, and, you know, you got your loud, your loud 20s with a big mic, loud 20% with a big mic. I always equate it to like, I equate it to middle school.
Yeah.
It's like if you and this other kid are like kind of having an issue, but both of you are actually really don't want to fight.
Yeah. Right?
But
yeah,
the whole,
yeah,
everybody outside is like, come like, on,
fight,
bro.
Fight, did fight,
you,
yeah, fight.
You already said about your mama. She said about your mama. Yeah. And you're like, oh, what'd you say? And it's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, well, nah, bro. Like, if you're like, everybody chill for a second.
Yeah.
Okay, let's get to what we talking about. And you, and my position is always like, if the dignity and value of your very personhood, if in my mind, that's where my politics land, is like, I just need to value your personhood.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And if I can, and if there are laws, like using scripture, like, okay, the greatest scripture is like, greatest command is love God and love your neighbor, right? Yep. Okay.
Unless your neighbor's trans, that's in the
unless
back.
Your neighbor's trans, then you can't. Because they're not supposed to exist.
There's a little asterisk.
Yeah, yeah, no. But yeah, totally, yeah. But like, no, then how do you do that? It's almost like, how can you scale it? How do you scale loving your neighbor? Yeah. Well, it's voting. Yeah. Institutionalized neighborliness, if you will.
What?
My homegirl Nish Wyseth said that. It's like, well, this is the best way to love my neighbor. If you tell me in scripture, my neighbor is everybody. Not only is my neighbor everybody, when Jesus was specifically asked who your neighbor was, the story, as the story goes, the Good Samaritan story, the story is, oh, the dude you hate and are racist against.
Yeah.
That's your neighbor.
They forget that part of the story.
They forget that. It's like, yeah, you're the dude you hate the most.
Yeah.
You know, so how do I do this? Well, if I go to this voting booth thinking about how can I love my neighbor? Mm. Like if it's so, how can I value them in a way? So then if I'm choosing these things, I'm not saying it don't have to be a zero sum game to where it's like, I'm going to choose something that's detrimental to myself for the sake of them. But I can say to me, like, again, as a believer, I'm walking in and I'm saying, is this loving my neighbor?
Yeah. You know, I love that. I love that. And you know, Tim and I were talking about on either his podcast or this one about how there's a lot of things ever since I've become a Christian where it's like there are some things that I go, oh, I guess that's a little more conservative, right? And then there are some things that you go, oh, that's like hella liberal. And that's a good place to be. So when you brought up the, you know, white conservative evangelicals, right? I grew up thinking that was what a Christian was.
That was all a Christian.
So I was an atheist for so long because I was just kind of like, oh, these guys, like I grew up, I became political under George Bush, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't like this. So I guess I don't like Jesus or whatever.
Totally.
And, you know, maybe this will piss people off, but I've legitimately been surprised. And then even when I started becoming more conservative, I remember I'm like, all right, maybe like over COVID, I'm like, maybe I'm just like a conservative. And then George Floyd happened. And while all the cops I know, a lot of conservatives, everyone was like, this is that was clearly fucked up. I saw some conservatives just so desperate to be like, defend the cop because that's what conservatives are supposed to do, right? Mm-hmm. And again, even though my cop friends were like, oh, this is bad for us.
No, he, yeah.
Right? And when I became a Christian and I started following a bunch of different pastors, white and black, the fact that I was surprised, and again, you were talking about King, right? Mm-hmm. So this is how either ignorant I was, probably both, or bastardized Christianity has become, that I was surprised, even conservative or even pastors who seemed more conservative, mm-hmm. innocent black person gets shot, they're sharing a petition. Mm-hmm. And I remember being like, oh, so I can be Christian and like, and this is gonna sound wild, care about social justice.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because in my head, any sort of social justice is equated to reactionary liberals, and yeah. any kind of Christianity was equated to racist conservatives.
Yeah. Yeah.
When if you're actually following Jesus or you're trying to do Christianity as close to Jesus as possible, it's like, yeah, man, I mean, you might be conservative on some like family value stuff or whatever, but like you clearly care about poor and disenfranchised people.
I mean, they're tenets of the faith. Yeah. I think too, like, without getting too much, I'm a history nerd.
Yeah.
No, you don't know this already, but without getting into like the Phyllis Schlafly's of the world and like, you know, the silent majority and the creation of that, creating a voter block, and before getting into all that, it's when you think about intersections of identity, and I know conservatives hate the term, but I'm just using it
sure
in it by definition, right? We all exist in different spheres. The as a believer, and it's a mind fuck, which is kind of what you're getting at, is that these categories, conservative, liberal, centrist, it's like we're putting the cart before the horse. The categories that we exist in is what we exist, is what we believe. These things are added on after. It's almost like I don't know how else to explain this, but like those terms colonized.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Right. So like what does a colonizer do? They come in and they draw lines on the ground.
Yep.
And say that this belongs here and this belongs there. But I'm like, well, the ground existed the whole time.
Yep.
You just threw a line, like that's why like a lot of like, even, you know, I'm jumping around again, but I'm a history nerd here. But like some of the conflicts in Africa is because you just drew a line through a village,
right?
And you called this sure. one country
yeah.
and that one that country.
Yeah.
But that was across the street. Last yeah. week, we were the same people.
Oh.
You know what I'm saying? So I think what happened sort of with these political terms is you got this beautiful umbrella of faith that has this diversity of thought.
Yep.
And then political power came in and drew lines,
yep.
right? And the political power, because the faith is made up of just humans,
yep.
right? And it was those same humans. You look at, like, I'm going back to slavery again. You got Puritans and you got abolitionists. You got Wesley and you got these. These is the same people believe the same yep. thing, fighting over the institution of slavery.
Right.
So if you're trying to make these categories fit, it's like, well, no, like these categories are chunking off pieces of the faith and trying to say, well, we own that. It's
yeah.
like, you don't own that.
Well, and they're stripping our humanity, right? Because
yeah.
how terrible is it for conservatives to be like, I guess I'm the party that's cool with black people getting killed? Like, I remember.
Yeah, like you hear yourself?
Right. Like, yeah. they don't, all the conservatives I know, including my black conservative friends, they don't want to be on that side. But when we're so politicized, it's like okay, so for example, the fact that I can say this is like disgusting. The fact that I can say, if I had a political show and people on the left and the right listened to it, and I said, a black man was killed by the cops, right away, the left goes, all right, I guess I'm going to side with the black guy. And the right goes, but before hearing anything,
you didn't know nothing happened.
The right goes, the cops, right? The fact that, so I guess that means liberals just hate cops. And I guess that means that everyone on the right is just cool with black people dying. It's so gross, man. I remember I started right before George Floyd died. I started doing some conservative shows to kind of talk about like this. And, you know, I was getting a ton of conservatives writing me really nice messages like, man, I don't agree with all your politics. You're a little too liberal for me, but I like that you're trying to bring people together. And then when I started posting about George Floyd, some of these same people who were like, man, I'm glad you can see both sides, were like, oh, looks like Captain Libtard's back or like whatever. And it's like, how is that a liberal issue?
That's an unfortunate like mark of our scene is where, you know, these parties get to scream mine on issues and they don't belong to you.
No.
They belong to us.
Yeah.
Like these are us experiencing life. And like you said, yeah, like, I mean, surely you can believe in an institution and think that I don't want to pay high taxes, right? And still don't want a guy to die in the street, man. Like, surely you could do that.
These
you know what
are
I'm
different
saying?
Things, right?
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? And surely I can be like, yeah, like you know, I think the earth should... I think we should take care of the earth. It's the only one we got, guys. Like, you know.
If you see a black teenager get killed, you're not going to be like, I'm a free market guy.
No.
Like, it's still bad. And the fact is both sides, and the left does this too, have stopped showing empathy for the other side. And I think, or for anyone who just votes differently. And I think that when we start to dehumanize people who disagree with us, we're just gonna go further and further and further and further apart. Now there's some stuff like this is what you were talking about, and this is where I have to stop myself, where it's just like, if you're saying that because of my skin color or because of my sexuality, I don't deserve rights, then my whole bringing people together shtick is a little more like suspect.
Yeah, it's like all like honestly, like I still hold the position that like, listen, all ideas aren't equal.
Right.
Like some ideas are bad.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and I don't know what to say. You shouldn't get like there's a time where it's like, no, it's someone should turn off your mic. You know what I'm saying? Like you're proverbial. You know, and then there's other times where it's like, okay, let me let you talk. But like you said, like if we're talking about like a person's very personhood, it's like, well, I don't know where we can go if we talking about this person's personhood, you know, and honestly, even growing up, you know, black church, like that was something that the queer issues were something that we had to grow in and mature in because, you know, we come from black church. They wasn't very affirming either. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So for us, it was more like, let me speak for me. For me,
that,
it
by
was
the way,
more
when
like,
I was a white ally and black people and gay people started fighting, I was always just like, I'm gonna sit this one out.
Let me go ahead and sit this one. I'm gonna let y'all work this one out.
I was like, I don't know what side to pick.
Nah, but like, I think there was the for me, the reality was I started thinking, how are you talking about them? Like, what are the phrases? What are the verbiage? What are we just, I'm cool with this. I don't mind if it's this, but I just don't want my kids around, you know, this. Yeah. So you start hearing that and then you start saying, damn, that's what y'all said about black people too. Oof. So then when you start hearing like, oh my God, you're using the same language for them that you use it for me. Then for me, it was like, wait a minute now, let me think about this for a second. You know what I'm saying?
I got to call myself out because I never thought about that because I was always, you know, like for the trans issues, I've spoke very loudly on, you know, Glenn Beck on big right wing shows being like, hey man, I don't agree with kids going to drag shows. I don't agree with this, but we can't bully trans people. We can't act like trans people are coming after your kids, blah, blah, blah. And I do wonder, I never thought about that. I still think like, I don't know, call me out. Like, I still think that, bringing kids to something sexual, whether it's straight or queer, isn't good because it's sexual, right?
Yeah, sexualizing stuff. I'm like, is it, I mean, we've had this talk even with our own children. Is it any different than like Cinderella waiting for the prince to kiss him. You know what I'm saying? Like kiss her, like whatever the case
may
be.
I'm a judge of fucking redneck dad who brings his kid to Hooters. Just like, you
know
what I'm
like,
mean?
Come on, bro.
Like, I'm not like, gonna be like, that's good.
Yeah. My dad.
I know, right? But I'm like, but absolutely, you're right. It's like, dude.
But the comparison I never thought about, I think the drag show thing is different because it's like oftentimes specifically sexual, but I never thought of that comparison about, yeah.
It's cool if you guys are over there. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm I don't know, bro. Like, I don't know, man. Yeah, but you're right. I think that, yeah, as a parent, I'm like, what you choose to do with your children, if especially if it's one of those like drag like children's reading stories,
super
do I don't I personally am like, I don't care. Like, if you're gonna read a children's book to my child and you want to dress the way you want to dress, I don't care.
If they're reading like the novelized version of Showgirls, then I'm like,
that's a different story.
Now we draw the line.
I'm more worried about what you're reading. Exactly. Yeah. I'm like, but like, I personally, I'm like, I don't care, man. That's raise your kids. You feel me? You know what I'm saying? But yeah, like, but I think again, like agreeing with lifestyle to me seems like such an unnecessary sentence. Because I'm like, I don't need you to agree with my lifestyle.
Right.
What are you talking about? We are talking about geopolitical rights to exist as a citizen.
Yeah.
Whether I think cheese is terrible.
Sure.
I don't agree with your lifestyle because you eat cheese.
Right.
Like, what do you care? What do you care? What do you care if I eat cheese or not? You know what I'm saying? So to me, like, again, that's the libertarian in me. I'm like,
If I'm not hurting anybody,
totally.
How
you fuck would you do with your genitals? Like, if that's, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what's going on in your body. I mean, whatever. If my child's teacher does that with their genitals, I don't give a fuck.
Sure.
Are you a good teacher? You know what I'm saying? Have you touched my child?
Right.
Okay, that's a different story.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? But all that to say, if I could hear it coming out of my mouth, something that I know was said to oppress my own people, then I need to start thinking about how I'm thinking about something.
Yeah.
And that's
and you've caught yourself before.
I've caught myself. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I meant by like even my own personal, it's me still being, you know, left progressive, you know, revolutionary, still having to admit that like, yeah, I had to grow in those issues too, because I was like, damn, I carried a gang of prejudice too. You know,
dude, and that's the thing. That's kind of what we were talking about earlier with just like, just be honest about your shit.
Yeah.
And the left is the most guilty of this, is just sort of acting like, you know.
They shit don't stink, huh?
Yeah. And it's like, hey, man, this got me in trouble. Like, we all mess up. We all have thoughts we're not proud of. And that's been something that I never thought I would become so much better with as a Christian. Because again, I just grew up thinking Christians were just the most judgmental. Mm-hmm. And the deeper into my faith I go, the more just grace and forgiveness. I think that once you can give yourself grace, once you realize that you have been given grace, way easier to call yourself out.
Yeah.
When you just think it's all about me and what my Twitter circle thinks and these journalists in Brooklyn, mm-hmm. You're like, I'm not going to say anything that's going to get me in trouble until it just like piles up.
Yeah.
But when you know you have grace, you've been given grace, you've been forgiven, it's way easier to be like, yeah, man, I used to be a dick about gay marriage, but now I don't care or whatever.
Yeah.
Because you're judging yourself less harshly. And I think because of that, and I'm not saying a lot of Christians, or I'm not saying most Christians do this, but in theory, because of that, you can be more vulnerable and you can be more open to your mistakes, or even open to be currently corrected with something you believe.
Yeah. And then gracious to the other person,
right,
to be able to look at them and say, oh, things are so simple for you. Like it's really that simple. It's, oh, well, this is right. And you're like, oh, all right, man. You know what I mean? Like,
allowed to say it's hard, or you're allowed to say, I don't get it. You know?
It's complicated, yeah.
Hello, it's me, Jamie. Please don't fast forward. This is not a commercial about shaving your balls or BetterHelp, although I'm sure they're great. And if you mess up shaving your balls, maybe you need BetterHelp. I don't know. They don't give us money. Who does support us is you. And if you want to stay in touch with us, if you want to read my thoughts on mental health, on this journey I'm on, I won't use the word journey. If you want to be first to find out about tour dates, all of that good stuff, the best way to stay in touch with us, the best way to support us, the best way to join the community is to sign up for the newsletter. We really appreciate you guys. We want to give back to you like you give to us. And so the way we will be doing that is through this newsletter. So if you want to subscribe, you can find the link in the bio or underneath the video or in the podcast description. Wherever you are listening or watching, exists a link for the newsletter. Thank you again. We'll see you in the back row. Where do you go when you were talking about the voter bloc that you just like can't fuck with, the ones who see people as not people? Mm-hmm. Does the Jesus side of you kick in, or is the Black Panther side of you kick? Like, is there a part of you that's like, I can help them, or if only they knew? Or is there a part of you that you're just fucking done with it?
I mean, how many cups of coffee have I had?
I
fluctuate between all of
this
that.
This would have been a great time to promote your coffee. Like, when discussing racism, can we camera?
Can you listen?
Huh?
When discussing racism.
We're trying to bring the divided country together.
They're right there. Terraform cold brew. It's even two faces on there. Yeah. One is Ethiopians, one's Mayan. So that's all.
Hell yeah, that's not going to help any of the racists.
They don't care at all.
Two bad things. But yes. Together.
But the coffee.
Yeah, coffee's great.
Yeah, which is also from Africa. But yeah. don't tell nobody that. Anyway, yeah. No, I think there's a part of me that's like, there's the part of you that says like, look, dude, I'm not going to cast my pearls among swine. That's just a Bible phrase. I'm not calling them swine. If you don't,
sure.
Not calling you a pig. You know what I'm saying? But there's a part of me that's that. There's a part of me that feels like at this stage, it's not, the revolution doesn't sit solely on my shoulders.
Yeah.
I'm a part of a bigger story. So I don't have to own everybody's thing. I can do what I can do, get, you know, inroads where I can be.
Yeah.
And then there's a part of me that like, yeah, understands, I think because of my faith and what I know about politics, that facts don't change a person's heart.
Yeah.
You know, love, it's grace, love. Yeah. Experience, goodness, that's what changes a person's heart. And because a person can know something is false.
Yeah.
And be like, but this is what it is.
Oh, they double down sometimes.
But you double down. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, we're witnessing that now. You know what I'm saying? So like, and I've seen it within our faith, seen it outside the faith where you just like, you're just so convinced. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think when you're just so convinced, and especially like you said, the person that's like the personhood situation, I'm like, I'm already like, well, you already don't see me as an equal anyway.
Maybe so that's like, where white allies actually do step in. Like, hey, you deal with this. You know what I mean?
That's exactly where y'all like, step in and be like, we got this, bro. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Like, this is what he's saying.
You take time off.
Take a break. Yeah. But yeah, so no, I think all of it kicks in. I think that like, again, you know, 15 years ago, Black Panther me would have been like, yeah, I mean, well, they don't want us here. So.
Right.
That's Black nationalism. It's like, well, you'll never treat us justly. So let's just, and part of me goes, well, I mean, damn, I mean, we got a couple years of evidence, you know what I'm saying? That I'm like, you know, but then the other part is like, but no, dude, I got a right to be here. And so do you, you know what I mean? Like, let's figure this out.
What do you think is, this is so broad, but what do you think is sort of, because I remember during Occupy, I remember during the protests, I mean, God, there was overlap with like the Trayvon. There was so much stuff happening.
Yeah.
There was all this debate kind of in the left, like, do you make change through Washington? Do you make change in the streets? Do you make change by what I'm doing now? Just trying to be a better neighbor. You've had so much experience. When it comes to either, I mean, I guess it'll be different answers, but systematic change, but also just changing someone's heart.
Yeah.
What do you find through all of these different experiences is the most powerful?
That's a good question. It has to be both and.
It has to be.
It has to be. Mm. I think that, it has to be both and. There's just no other way around it. Like, because you, there's the, when you listen to black conservatives, you're like, well, the Democratic Party are not your savior. And I'm like, amen.
Yep.
So they go, so therefore, and I'm like, they're not my savior either. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So like, and so I think that, well, let me back up a bit. You have prejudice, discrimination, and racism, right? And they're three different things.
Yeah.
Right. If we're prejudice, I just, a lot of times that's like acting on a preference. Yep. You know what I'm saying? You want to be around people you want to be around.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yep. So I'm like, I'm showing a particular prejudice towards things that I'm comfortable towards. Okay, that's fine. I mean, what can I say? Discrimination is, now I'm acting on that.
Yep.
So I'm like, I'm going to make it so that this person is on the outside and only people I want are on the inside.
Yep.
That's a hard situation because now you're acting on a preference that is clearly unjust, right? Now, these are hard conditions.
Yep.
Racism is when you take that and you institutionalize it.
Right.
And then you make it into a law.
Yeah.
Right. So now the law allows me to discriminate based on my prejudice.
So it goes, I only want to be around Filipino women. Then it goes, I can't handle being around Filipino women. Put them over there. Then it goes, lock up Filipino women.
All of it.
Nailed it.
Yes. And it's illegal for them.
Yes.
To ever come into this room. Now it's illegal.
You know what I'm saying?
So you're like, okay, so now you've institutionalized, you've built a structure. So, but the structure was built on your prejudice.
It started way.
So now if you change the structure, which we did.
Yeah.
Right? Slavery's done. Jim Crow's done. But no one dealt with the heart of it.
Yeah.
That said, damn, we probably should have never done that.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? And all the shit we gained from this, you know what, man? Man, take this couch, bro.
Yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, I don't want this no more. Do you, dog? You know what? We took this from you, bro.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
It's that like America's a bunch of dry drunks. Have you ever heard that term?
That's exactly what it is.
Where it's
you're still an alcoholic.
You're still a narcissistic asshole. You just happen to be sober right now.
Exactly. Yeah. You're just not drinking right now.
Yeah.
That's a good way to put it.
But you're still exhibiting the behaviors that stemmed from your childhood that give you that addictive personality where you have. Yeah. Yes.
You changed these institutions because we made you.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? We made you change it.
You weren't thrilled about it.
No, we went to war because like we had to make you do this. You didn't change your mind. Right? You know what I'm saying? So that's why I'm like, it has to be both. And it has to be on the individual because the individual creates the systemic. And it's slow. You know what I'm saying? And there are parts of a pluralistic society that we just all live in, which is like, as now this, my critique of the Christian is you have to understand that that's just, you live in a secular nation. Right. Like this is a post-World War II nation state. It is what it is.
Dude, ever since becoming Christian, it is wild to me that we're still referred to as a Christian nation. I have people in Austin, like I've talked about this before, literally if I'm talking about God, get up and like move to the next table. Like I'm like, it's
We're not. I don't understand how you could have ever said that. You know what I'm saying?
Wild.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, so I'm like, so yeah, and that's like you're right. Like, so that's the like, okay, get out of your delusions, guys.
Yeah.
Like your founding fathers did not all sit in the room, break open their Bibles, discuss the Ten Commandments, and then say, how do we build a country like this? That's not like, guys.
Right.
That's not what happened. Right. You know what I'm saying? And it's fine. It's fine that it didn't happen like that. That's fine.
Wow.
Here's where we are.
Yep.
Okay, love your neighbor.
Yep.
Right? I'm going to do the same. Okay? You know what I'm saying? And look, you don't have to come to the cookout.
Yeah.
I don't mean I don't love you.
Yeah.
You're invited, but if you don't come, it's all right, bro. It's fine. Yeah. Like, you know what I'm saying? And look, if I make your racist Uncle Dave uncomfortable,
yep.
that's your racist Uncle Dave.
Yeah.
I don't hate you. I don't need you to, I personally don't need you to stand up for me in a place that I'm not at. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now, that's your choice though. Now, if you just want to let Uncle Dave go ahead and do what he want to do, that's between you and Uncle Dave.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's your heart.
Yeah.
The point I'm making is the unity or the beloved community that I'm looking at, that Dr. King talked about, the beloved community I'm looking at is not, it's not sameness as much as it's oneness.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, we don't have to be the same, fam. Wow. Like,
it's, right.
It's
right.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's cool. Like,
it's more interesting to not be the same.
It's more interesting. Look, I don't like, even, you know, when I say, I hope I'm not rambling, but like, if you look at like, the school segregation, like I'm going back to the 60s. When you look at the school, or 50s, when you look at the school segregation of schools, it's not so much that black people didn't like going to school with black people. Like, it was actually much easier like that. You know what I'm saying? Actually enjoyed ourselves. We had role models. Like our teachers were black. Yeah. The principal, we saw successful black people all the time.
Yeah.
And all the studies show that like black people do better when you have black leaders.
I never thought about that. Being like, great news, kids. We're bringing you with the
we're
white kids.
We're bringing you to this place where your life is going to be threatened every day. All right. No, like what are you talking about? You know what I'm saying? It was more the fact that you saying we can't. And I'm like, you can't speak out of both sides of your mouth. You can't tell us that we're equal under the law, but I can't go to this school.
Right.
Like, what is you talking about? Like, that's not you. What are you saying?
Yeah.
This is my local school. I got to drive all the way over there for 45 minutes because that's the black. What are you talking about?
Right.
Then you said, these are your documents. You said we were created equal. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So like, so yeah. So it's so, I say all that to say, like, I just feel like we just felt like I should be able to go and you should be able to come to my school if you want to. It's fine.
Dude, I think if people on the right, on the left, everyone just gets out of their bubble.
Yeah.
You know, I'll tell you, when I was at my most social justice lefty, pretty much only hanging out with white journalists in Park Slope, Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Right. Wow. And then when I started doing jujitsu, even my jujitsu gym now in Texas, like, a lot of black conservatives. Yeah. Like, it's just all sorts of people. And we all have each other's back.
Yeah.
And when you can get into some kind of room, whether it's jujitsu, whether it's church, where it's a bunch of people who look different and you're being brought together for a thing. That's the beginning.
Yeah.
I think that's just the first step. If you're listening to this and you're like, man, I'm not even registered to vote. And like, I don't really watch the news because I don't trust it. Is everyone in your circle the same?
Yeah.
I would say the first thing to do is just start making friends with people who look differently, who fuck different people, like who whatever it is. And again, that doesn't mean I hang out with a lot of conservatives now. That doesn't mean that I'm going to agree with everything. Or, you know, if I started hanging out with a bunch of gay people, I'd be like, I guess I got to find me some dick. Like, but I'm certainly if you show up to the barbecue and you end up humoring drunk Uncle Dave's questions about like your hair and Obama and shit like that, and you leave and he just, the next time he hears some racist bullshit, is sort of like, I don't know, I met that dude and he was kind of cool.
Oh yeah. Yeah, prop was cool.
Yeah, that doesn't mean he's going to vote differently, but that is sort of like the first
step. The door opens,
The
door opens. Those door open things are important.
I wanted to open, not talk about politics.
Well, it's been 45 minutes.
Can we end and talk about poetry?
Yeah, bro.
Okay. So this is what I was actually like the most excited to talk about. So I don't know if I've even said, I feel like poetry, it's either classified as like above my pay grade, pretentious, you know. So in high school, I just didn't get poetry.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I don't understand Shakespeare. I don't understand any of this stuff. So it's very like academic.
Mm-hmm.
Or it can be sort of like mocked in the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, if I first meet someone, I'm not going to be like, here's my book of poetry. Like,
I feel you.
But at the same time, like every time poet brain kicks in, I'm also just like, this is the coolest shit ever. But it's weird because in theory, poetry should be the most accessible because it's the most free. Mm-hmm. And I feel like for most people, they're either afraid of it or it's inaccessible. Does that make sense at all?
It makes perfect sense. Wow. And I agree. Like there's the part of it that's like, yeah, the, you know, the Tolstoy, Ernest Hemingway level to where you're just like, you have to get a college degree.
Yeah.
Like in poetry. Yeah. Like that's how hard it is. Right. Yeah. And then there's the, you know, bong.
Yeah.
Line one chakra where you're just
my ovaries are a plum tree.
Yes, exactly. You're just like, all right, bro.
Yeah.
I ain't.
Sure.
I'm not woke enough for that.
Plums got
a
plum.
You know what I'm saying? Like you just like, there's these both things, but then there's this other way that like the poetry that I'm talking about grew out of, you know, the same sort of African griots, you know, and storytellers into just the rhythm of just Black Southern preachers into hip hop, into blues, into like slam and spoken words. So there's a meter and a rhythm of just like you are the storytellers of your know, the sages, if you will, you know, medicine men in the Native American tradition. It's like where you are telling, you're archiving the emotions and telling the stories of the people who were, like you said, which is supposed to be acceptable.
Yeah.
I'm supposed to be like, you know, reaching up your spine and like, I'm saying what you were trying to say.
Yeah.
Like, exactly. So to me, good poetry is that like, I'm saying what you're trying to say.
Yeah. I love that. And it shouldn't be so pretentious. You have to sit there with a thesaurus. It should actually be translating.
It should be. And at the same time, there's a place for it. There's a place for that type of poetry, if that's your thing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I actually think like it's very, at least poetry I do, is very close to comedy.
Yeah.
It's very close to specifically stand up.
Okay. You know what I mean? So I don't think I've ever talked about this on a podcast. So I did, I did slam poetry for 2 or 3 years because I wasn't getting booked to comedy clubs because I was too political. Mm-hmm. And I'd never heard of it before. And I went home and my dad had HBO and I couldn't afford cable. Mm. So I was like, I'm going to watch this. And
I saw poetry.
And I was like,
well, I can be political there.
And I can be long-winded.
Yes.
Do you remember when Saul Williams literally just brought out a scroll? I just shot back. And so I was like, okay. And so I was in New York at the time. Mm-hmm. So you had Bowery Poetry Club, New Eureka.
New Eureka Cafe.
And then there was a place called Bar 13.
Mm-hmm.
And I signed up for all three of these one day. Mm-hmm. And essentially I just took, I had a gay marriage joke and I turned it into like a 4-page poem. And you know, I started as a drummer. Mm-hmm. And so I always sort of had that
rhythm. You got rhythm, yeah.
Yeah. And bro, I did it for a year and like I won like the Bowery one, like at the end of year
final. Yeah.
No, not just the slam, like the entire year, like they flew me to Austin.
I was like nationals.
The grand, yes.
Yeah, you won nationals.
And like my first year. And then when I did that, I made it to the top 10 in nationals and like I played the Paramount Theater. I was still homeless.
Yeah.
So like I was so psyched to be at a fancy hotel, but you know, when it's so fancy, you can't afford anything.
Yeah.
Cause I was like, oh, the Hampton Inn doesn't charge me for Wi-Fi.
Yeah, totally.
Like $20. So and absurd. I remember when I made the top 10, I was literally walking up to the list at the hotel and I just heard multiple people be like, who the fuck is Jamie Kilstein?
Yeah.
And what I realized is so I ended up getting fourth. If I made it to the finals, I ran out of poems because you can't repeat.
No.
So I did all my good stuff to get there. I hand wrote something in the lobby at the Paramount Theater and I was like, if I make it to finals, I'm fucked.
You have to write it. Yeah.
And
finals, if you guys don't know, nationals is, it is brutal.
Because
if you run out, if you left your cannon off too early in the semis, it's like you better write the greatest poem of your life tonight.
I remember like I was just so happy to be there. Even when I started doing the not even semifinals, but just the regular weekly. I mean, there all the people I saw on Def Poetry Jam were just there. And I remember But then there was the same amount of infighting and weird bullshit or whatever. But
it's a scene's a scene. Yeah.
A scene's
every
a scene.
Scene's a
and
scene.
I remember telling myself, being like, well, poetry's going to be more than comedy because one, we're more elevated intellectually, and two, nah, we are man. Less respected. And so, and, but then I saw the same.
It's the same.
Same
bro.
Bullshit.
It's the same, dog. But yeah, no, it's the same.
I will say, man, like, I don't know. I've played some of the biggest venues in the world doing comedy. I don't know if anything, and like I said, I just did this for like 2 years. I don't know if anything was cooler than those like Friday night slams at New Eurekan. There was something so special. And I just remember being so proud of the word poet.
Mm-hmm.
And then I stopped and Sean was like, hey, why don't you do like a poem for like the intro for this?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, fuck yeah. And then I wrote these guys back and I was like, you know, because I started thinking like, oh, people on Twitter are going to make fun of me. Like, oh, I guess he's doing poetry again. And again, you know,
yeah.
And I was like, maybe I'll make it more conversational. And I think it landed somewhere in the middle. But I just, I remember being like, man, how does this thing that I had so much reverence for? And I literally like, I felt like a better person. I wrote more because mm-hmm. I was just like,
some every week. Yeah.
To suddenly almost being like embarrassed by it. I don't know what I'm trying to get you to therapy out of me. but I don't know, man. I just talk about the reverence you have or what you define,
yeah,
poetry as, or being a poet, yeah. I should
well,
say.
Let me back up, because I would say that if you'd have asked me in fourth grade what I wanted to be when I grow up, I would have said a stand-up comedian.
No shit. Yeah.
I'm good on my feet.
Yep.
Yeah. My improv is great.
Yep.
But I always felt like I can't write a joke to save my life. Right. Like, I can come up with them.
It's different.
Yeah, but I can't write them.
Yeah.
So if you see, like if you come to, like, I'm doing a poetry feature, in between the poems, it's essentially stand-up.
Stories.
Like, I'm cracking jokes the whole time because the poetry is so heavy. Yeah.
Right,
you know what I'm saying?
Right.
So in my mind, I'm like, so I've talked to other comedians and they're like, dude, you could do it. Yeah. You know, I'm like, but the only reason I can do it is because the pressures, all the poems are doing the heavy lifting.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so I'm like, the pressure's on that, and I've already worked on those. You know what I'm saying? The jokes, if they don't land, they don't land.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, but if I was like, if the jokes were front and center, be scary. But I think the reverence for me came from this battle rap, hardcore, backpacker hip hop. That's where I came from.
That's cool.
You know, so just slaughter whack MCs.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then in college, like so many other stories, I was chasing after this girl.
Yep.
Right.
Come on.
Yeah.
And
God, that's why I became an atheist. Yep. That's why I became a vegan.
Right.
That's why I stopped being an atheist. That's why I stopped being a vegan.
Chasing after some girl.
Yeah.
You know? So she was an upperclassman. She was just this little freedom fighter.
Yeah.
Speaking of Filipino girls, right? Filipino girl. She's like, she, you know, hearing my rapping, she was like, you'd probably be good at poetry.
Right.
And obviously I'm like, okay.
Sure. You know? Yeah.
So I went to just the little underground cafe at my
Real
college.
Quick, was there part of you that thought, because I it seems so different, I'm trying to phrase this like the least white as possible, in the black community, like if I say I'm a poet, there's something automatically sort of more like feminized about it. Was it that way for you too? Because like when you look, like I remember even when I told people, you know, I'm doing poetry, and they're like, what? I'm like, at the New Eurekan Cafe, and Mos Def plays there.
Yeah.
What I mean? I'm like, I'd have to be like, it's kind of like rap, as opposed to, I think most people, especially with kids, like men are so afraid to be vulnerable that poetry, I grew up in my white
like that,
school
though.
Thinking about journaling, you know, chicks journaling.
Yeah. No, it's not like that, because you're thinking Gil Scott-Heron, you're thinking Langston Hughes,
the last
poets. We already have, that's why it's like the griot.
Right.
We already have a tradition. Yeah.
That's so cool.
Of that. Yeah. So, you know what I'm saying? It's like, no, you, even the smooth, like the pimp, you know what I'm saying? Like 70s pimp.
Right.
That's poems, all them lines, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
so that. Like, so you already have, having a silver tongue is already like, that's just in our culture.
Right.
But yeah, so I think the reverence though, to your question, was that since I came from like hip hop,
yeah,
it was like poetry spoken word was so stripped down because it's like there's no chorus, there's no get your hand up, there's no crowd communication, participation, there's no music, it's just you and the mic.
Words.
So like your words have to do it.
That's so cool.
I had this reverence because I was like, you go to this thing and I was like, I'm a pretty good MC, you know what I'm saying? So, but I went to this poetry thing and I was like, these people are writing circles around me. And I was like, I can't keep up. These fools are such better writers.
Wow.
So I was like, I want to start doing this because I just want to be a better writer.
That's awesome. Know? That's cool.
And so poetry became that for me where it's like, all right, you know, this the dojo, you know, and the open mic. So out in L.A., you know, New Eureka was the New York one. L.A.,
it was the
Poetry Lounge.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Poetry
Lounge,
my man Shehan.
Yeah,
that's my mentor. So like,
oh my goodness.
So Shehan, and then we had Mike and Dim Lights and Pomona.
That place was, I only played there twice.
Yeah.
And it was bananas.
Bro, the caliber. It's like even just the corny dude that just walked in, the unhoused dude that walked in on the side, you know, and just signed up.
Right.
You're just like, this is the greatest poem I've ever heard in my life. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so that type of thing. And again, coming from battle rap, having that, you know, kind of that competitive thing for me is like, even if I'm signing up for the open mic list, I'm like, I'm gonna write something new and I'm finna blow y'all's mind. So like you said, the exercise of having something new every week, you know, was that sort of like you said, that reverence that you have for this art form to be like, if I'm going to be like, cause, and even if it's my own sort of ego, if I walk into anything and that's performative, I've already categorized everybody as like, okay, you're the varsity.
You know what I'm saying?
You're the starting five. The rest of y'all are just chumps.
You're going to be mad at me. You're going to be mad at me.
The rest of y'all are just chumps. I don't want to be one of these second string chumps.
Yeah.
I'm trying to be on the varsity team. Man. So I started writing for that.
I kind of did. Did you feel like it gave you more permission to be vulnerable? Because just like with you coming from battle rapping, at first I was like, my comedy is going to get me to smoke these people because no one's funny.
Yeah.
But what I was really excited about, like deep down, is like, is like I can write earnestly and then the jokes just punch.
Yeah.
Right? The jokes are the accent, the high note and the guitar solo, whatever. Totally. And then I can ride that wave a little bit. The jokes kind of give me permission to be what I thought was more an artist. But then when I started, so the piece I did on Conan about war, if you watch it, I was introduced as a stand-up comedian, but when I was living out of my car doing feature spots at coffee houses for slam poetry, I remember telling this one guy, I think his name was Mike McGee, he was like some slam champion guy, being like, I'm gonna be the first person to do a slam poem on Conan. And I did. It wasn't announced as that. It just looked like an unhinged rant, but you watch me tapping my foot like it's a slam piece. I do two jokes up front, go into it. And the people who really got me, like Robin was one of them, was like, keep doing that. That's going to make you different.
Yeah.
And then I remember there were some comedy clubs where I would get booed off stage where people were like, I don't know what this is. And I think that's where my sort of shame started kicking in. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go back to being a comic.
Yeah.
When secretly I did sort of have more reverence, like saying I'm a poet, that felt more right to me.
Yeah.
Whereas a comedian, I've always just been kind of like, eh. Like I'm fine. I can write funny.
Yeah. Yeah. You're funny.
Yeah.
But
like, I don't like being called like a comic.
Yeah. I think anything that has like a subculture of nerdery, I'm always like, I get cringy about. You know what I mean? Because like, when I say, oh yeah, I'm a rapper, they're like, oh, you're a rapper.
Sure.
And you're like, well, but like I do poetry. Oh, word. So you're a poet. You're just like, well, it's kind of, but like, it's a little, you know what I'm saying?
I'm a writer.
Oh,
that's why I tell Uber. Like, I'm a writer.
Totally.
You say comedy or poet, you're fucked.
A million things, but yeah.
Creative question. What did you, cause that's a ballsy move to walk into a space, be like, I thought I was good and I'm bad. You could have left and just shit on poetry.
Yeah.
Like this happens in MMA schools all the time.
Yeah.
Is like, you know, dude, jacked CrossFit dude shows up, 17-year-old girl chokes
just
him
rolls
out.
Rolls him.
Yep.
Yeah.
And that person either, that's either his origin story of how he became a jiu-jitsu black belt and he showed up the next day and he signed up, or he just goes, well, if I could have used street rules, I could have, you know, knocked that girl out or whatever. Then he never comes back.
Yeah.
And that to me is such a sign of character for you to walk in, be like, oh, I'm kind of trash.
Mm-hmm.
And then be like, how do I get better? How do you, or someone listening, how do you push yourself to that point? How did you become a better writer? Like, was it so exciting because you're learning something new, or was it discouraging because like you thought you were the shit?
No, it was the exciting. That was the second. It was so exciting because you, I think if there's a, how do I say this? I had a level of okayness or security in my personhood.
Yeah.
Like I'm fine.
Yeah.
Like
none
of this stuff defines me.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? So I think that.
That's a huge difference, man. Because everything I do, I'm like, this is the thing.
Yes.
This is going to be the thing that saves me.
Yes.
Yeah.
So now don't let me paint this as if I figured something out. You know what I'm saying? Because I was okay with that because I already had an identity.
Mm.
As an artist over here.
Yeah.
I'm already a great rapper.
Right.
So at the time, that was my sort of security.
Yeah.
Where it's like, well, I can suck at this because I'm good at this.
But again, to give you credit, a lot of people would be like, but if they see me suck at this, that's going to make me less cool
in the thing I'm good.
I want to get back to doing like improv and sketch.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just like, I'm not great at it. I love it more than stand-up.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I'm not great at it. And like, what if my old stand-up friends who have seen me crush in front of all these people? But when it's about, when you are actually secure and it's about like, no, I want to get better. I want to hone my craft.
Yeah. And you know, like you have a certain, you've already done 10,000 hours in something adjacent.
Yeah,
so you're like, even if you went right now and did improv, you'd be okay.
Right.
You're like, you know, you're not excellent, but I'll be fine.
I've been on stage enough that I'm not going to like completely shit the bed.
Exactly. Yeah. So that was me in poetry where it's like, it won't be incredible, but it'll be good.
Yeah, you know.
I just want to be incredible.
Right.
So, but I think to answer your question is like the trick is being like understanding that this new thing doesn't define you and there's joy in learning something new.
It's my favorite thing ever.
Exactly. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Because I feel like if anything, I was able to like use this evil power for good in the sense of like being so secure in who I was in this other thing.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Gave me that freedom to be that. But I held that security so tight.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, rather than being like, but it's okay if I suck at that too. Like, that was something I had to grow into.
Craft-wise, how did you start chipping away and becoming a better poet? Like, did you just start watching and immersing yourself more
open
in that
mics,
poetry
bro.
Scene?
Yeah, every week.
That's it.
That's
so
what
just
I'm
reps and watching.
Reps. You just get your reps and being cool with being around artists that are way better than you are.
Yeah.
And just being like, I find that inspiring. It's not intimidating. It's inspiring.
Dude,
like,
I was teaching a kid's class at jiu-jitsu and they didn't want to do the advanced class. And I was like, you know how I got good? Is I show up to a new gym, I find the biggest black belt. That's the first dude I'm sparring with.
Yeah.
Because there are people who just show up and they want to smash white belts and feel temporarily good about themselves because their marriage is falling apart or whatever.
Totally.
And you're like, nah, man, you got to put yourself around those people.
Yeah, totally.
Nerdy question, but how do you stop yourself? Because I remember there were like a couple poems I wrote that were like not funny, and it was clearly me trying to be that sort of like intellectual, you know, cool kid lower. Like being around those people to inspire you is good, but then how do you stop yourself from losing you and suddenly now you're just trying to replicate them?
Yeah.
Like, did you have a phase where suddenly you're like, oh, now I sound like a shittier version of them and you've lost that rap edge?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And I honestly, like, I can't speak for everybody else, but I know for me, it's reps.
Just reps.
It's no, just
that's
reps.
The answer. It's always, you know what I'm saying? It's always the, you it's, always think you're going to get advice. It's all, that's always the nope. fucking answer.
It's always it. You
it's
just
reps
have to keep,
suck reps. It's just a reps. Little better. Reps.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's all it is. You get it out of you. Like my, one of my older like rap homies used to be like, you just have to write it out of your system. Just write it out. Just get it out of your system. Just
dude,
keep
that's
writing them.
Great
you
advice.
Know what I'm saying? Like you said, just write it out of
people
your system.
People give that advice for like journaling and shit too.
Yeah.
Where it's like, don't think about it. You're just getting the bad thoughts yeah. out.
The amount of like songs, poems, verses that will have not and will never see the light of day.
Yeah.
Like there's just so many right. of them.
Dude, you I just mean? Threw out, we just moved and there were a bunch of journals that I found that had like jokes or poems or whatever. Didn't even bother looking at them. I was like, trash. And I done. Just threw them out right because I knew the phase of my life I was in. I yeah. was like, maybe there's a good line in there. Not worth it.
Not
worth
it.
Reading
not
what I was
I'm not going through all this. Yeah.
I haven't talked about this in a really long time, but I think you would be a perfect person to give this advice to people. I talk about mental health a lot on the show. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people, all the kind of self-help gurus will always talk about, you know, you need some kind of mindfulness, some kind of like physical activity, get your diet right, get your sleep right.
Yeah, yeah.
I truly think, and I thought of this when you were talking about building a new skill,
uh-huh.
and I'm like, ooh, you know what? Maybe I'm going to do a poetry reading again or excited yeah. about improv. I think that creativity
absolutely.
Is part of the mental health, whatever. Not trifecta, whatever four is. Mm-hmm. I think that that doesn't get talked about a mm-hmm. lot. And for me, if I'm not creating, even if it's by choice, even if it's like, man, I'm gonna take some time off from stand up and suddenly I'm just depressed or snappy yeah. and I'm like, what's happening? Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, like I haven't done stand up since this show started. And I think it's healthy for me and I think it's good. But also, I think it's completely affecting my mental health.
Yeah.
Which is another reason I'm like, oh shit, maybe I'll do like improv or poetry.
Yeah.
But so there are a lot of people listening to this and they're like, cool, man. He's a poet and a rapper. You have a podcast right now.
Yeah.
I'm a mom.
Yeah.
But do you think that for people who don't think they have a skill or don't think they have, they don't think they're a poet or whatever, there is still a way to get sort of like, that everyone kind of does have an inner poet.
Yeah.
And you can still get it out even if you're not trying to make a living.
Yeah. I actually think that's the key
yeah.
is
wow.
I think having something, we've talked about this, Sean, and yeah. Matt, yeah. My road team's behind the camera here,
yeah,
but
yeah.
like we talk about it where like I had an older gentleman tell me like, yo, have something that you're learning
yeah.
or that's a hobby that's completely not tied to your income
Ugh.
That you can afford to suck at.
Ugh.
Like always have something that you can suck at, right?
That's so good.
And yeah, so.
Cause when I start to get good at something, I immediately go,
how can I make money?
Yeah, but not even in like a like, gimme way, but in a like, again, this is my thing.
I wanna do it.
Like
yeah.
I did that with jujitsu over COVID. I'm like, that's where I started making sketches. Just
yeah.
jujitsu. I'm like, I'll be the jujitsu sketch guy.
Yeah, it'd be great. Yeah,
yeah.
And you're like.
And yeah. then you start showing up at jujitsu gyms and people are like, oh, you're that sketch guy. I didn't like that, wanna roll? And you're like, ah, oh, this sucks.
Damn it. I mean, that can right next to you. Like coffee was a hobby for me.
Right.
And now it's,
yes.
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's
so
really
like,
good, man.
So I would even say, yeah, to like, is that I find other things. We over COVID, we were able to like buy our house, praise the Lord God Almighty, mm-hmm. right? But like my whole life, like yard work was punishment.
Right.
Like if you get in trouble, go out there and pull them weeds. Go
yeah,
out there, you know what
yeah,
I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like it was punishment.
Yeah.
The second we signed that paper, I was like, I bet you we could probably put some succulents right there.
Yeah.
What's it, you know, it's
yeah.
grass coming out that crack. I wonder if we let me get me a Home Depot
yeah.
card. You know what I'm saying? Like the second I got it. So, and I'm like,
I want to start doing that with cooking where it's
yeah.
like, instead of looking at it as a chore, look at it as like an art.
Yeah. I'm learning something. You
yeah.
know what I'm saying? So, yeah. So like I, you know, slowly taught my dad was a city boy. He was Black Panther. You know, like I said earlier, he's a city boy. Like
yeah.
we didn't have a drill growing up.
Yeah.
I realize this right now. There wasn't a drill in my house.
Yeah.
Cause we were just, my dad was like, why don't I pay somebody to do it better than me?
Yeah.
Like he would sit just like this, never talk louder
yep.
than this. Why would I do it if that's their job and they
yeah.
can do it better than me?
Dude,
you know?
I'm the same way.
Yeah.
I never had, I thought it was a masculinity thing, but it's like, no, I only lived in apartments in New York. So
exactly.
Dude with the drill would come
you
over.
You call a guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, you know, I remember I was dating a girl and her daddy was like, "You don't know how to change your oil?" And I was like, "I don't know why you know how to. It's $10."
Yeah.
And like,
is that your profession?
Yeah. I was like, "It's $10 and it's right here."
Yep.
I just dropped the car off, go get a burger, come back. Yep. Like, I don't understand. That's their job. That's what they do.
Yep.
Right? So anyway, all that to say, once we bought the house, it was like, well, I'm going to learn how to do this stuff. You know what I'm saying? And I'm like, yeah, I suck at it. You know, but like you said, like, you know, for a while it was tied to my masculinity too. Like, I fought against it. But just that mental practice of being like, dude, the child mind, you know, the know nothing mind. Like,
yeah.
Just have moments when you're just, you're still in wonder. And I think for that, like you said, that mom, whatever that project is, if you could say to yourself, like, nah, like, I don't have to be good at this.
Right.
This don't have to be amazing. Matter of fact, it's kind of, it's going to be fun not being good
at it. It's actually freeing.
It's very freeing.
It's harder for me and you to write a poem because we're thinking about being on stage.
I need to get to this. Yeah.
Yeah. And we're thinking about what are people going to say. If you want to become a poet, when your kids go to sleep in your journal, no one else is going to see.
Yeah.
Maybe you post something online if you love it. Like, you're probably going to get better work than we will.
Absolutely.
Because you're not putting it through the filters of audiences, Twitter, cancel culture, like whatever.
All of it. Yeah. Like you said, you once you put your kids to bed to be like, okay, what was the feeling today? The feeling was angst. All right.
Yeah.
Fill this page with what angst feels like. You know what I'm saying? And then you just did it. You know, what about today? Oh, today I felt very content. Okay. Fill this page with content. You know what I'm saying? And it, like you said, like no one's judging it. This is...
And it's sure. It's weird.
It's fun.
That, I mean, just like Christianity, I thought it was so judgmental and it ends up being the most welcoming place. You know, with poetry, I always thought it was the most pretentious because of, you know, again, like what we were talking about.
Because of the pretension.
And it's, in theory, the most lawless. There are the least amount of rules.
Facts.
Some people might tell you otherwise.
Yeah.
But there are the least amount of rules. Like, you can write whatever you fucking want and call it a poem.
Facts. Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's just, yeah.
I'm telling this to myself, so I start writing poetry, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm just like, you can do whatever you want, right?
Yeah, I was like, I don't know what to add to that.
Tell me to write a poem prop. That's all you need to do.
Just, yeah.
Okay, last question. We've been asking everyone this. I thought it was going to be stupid. It's ended up being my favorite part of the podcast. Everybody has given answers that have... Do what you will with it. You meet a person, never heard of Jesus. How do you describe Jesus?
Damn. That's hard, man. Never heard. Yeah, it's hard to say, man. How do you describe him? I'm like, my brain goes a million ways. I'm like, okay, who is this person? What are they? Where do they come from? I'm sorry, dude.
No.
I go to the Jesuit, like, descend into the particulars.
Yeah, you
know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, you know, which is a big part of my theology is just like descending into the particulars. But I think, I think there's the like historical narrative of Jesus. But I think to me, it's like, I think my first thing is like, well, let's step back a second and be like, hey, I just want you to know you're worthy.
That's it.
You know what I'm saying? Like, and like you belong, like, yeah, you too. So like, I think, so then when it comes back around to like who Jesus is, it's like, that's what he's, to me, I'm like, that's what we're telling you is like, right. You belong, bro.
Yeah.
Like, you too.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
So yeah, I think I would be like, well, first of all, I'd describe it as like, nah, you belong, homie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let me tell you why I think that, you know?
That's perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow.
Now I feel bad segueing into plugs.
Don't feel bad, baby.
Tell people I'm gonna get your book the second I leave here. But where can people find all your things?
All my things are obviously on the website, prophiphop.com. That's also all of my at mentions.
Coffee stuff too?
Coffee stuff's there.
The coffee's great. And you got mugs?
God, dude. Shout out, Mir, man.
This is the coolest.
Thank you, man.
I'm very excited.
You're gonna love that thing.
I'm very excited about this.
But yeah, Terraform is the coffee. You could get that, but terraformcoldbrew.com. It'll come right to your house. If you're any of these followers, I'll take your conservative money.
Yeah.
if you want me in your little racist coffee shops.
That's how we bring people together.
I will take your money.
Yes.
But yeah, not. Yeah, prophiphop.com.
Yeah.
Terraform Cold Brew. Please, check me out.
The book?
Book's also called Terraform.
And Instagram.
prop hip hop.
Hell yeah.
All of it.
Music.
Prop hip hop. Matter of fact, actually, you know, so try to make this as succinct as possible. No. The poetry book is called Terraform, right? The book has four sections: the sky, the soil, the people, and the possibility. Those four sections are also musical EPs, also called Terraform the Sky, Terraform the Soil, and the People. And Terraform the Possibility is the final EP that just released last week.
I love it.
Right? And then the third part of that is the Terraform Coffee. So it's all part of this like book, music, drink experience.
That's sick.
And it's all, you can all get it. So like now it's been like a 3.5-4 year rollout. This is like
the
finale of all four of those things.
Hey, do you, this is not formulated a question yet, but like being Christian in this space, do you ever get either pigeonholed and like when people are trying to help you, like you're just going to be the Christian guy or I don't want to say discriminated against, but or like cast aside because it's like, oh, he's just the Christian guy? Or do you just try to just be like, I am an artist who happens to be Christian?
I mean, my position, I think a lot of it has to do with coming from like the West Coast, like since we're not like a Bible Belt state, so there was no Christian industry. It was just, you know what I mean?
It was you.
Yeah, it was no option. There was plenty of Christians out there like doing stuff, but there wasn't like, you know, there's like, we just looked on our Google map today and I'm like, there's 20 churches like right here. Yeah. And I'm like,
probably have like very massive podcast followings.
You know what I'm saying?
It's like an industry.
And yeah, and we just didn't come from that. So I think that like the luxury of, I say that really like luxury of being like, oh, I'm a Christian artist. Well, there was no Christian industry where I was from. So there was no point in saying it. You know what I'm saying?
That's so interesting, yeah.
And while we were at these open mics and hip hop shops and stuff like that, it was like, well, they knew we were Christians.
Yeah.
Just like we knew they was Rastas and we knew they was Muslims. It was just, we were all together. I think once I started touring, now that being said, yes, I've experienced that, but he's laughing. Yes, I've experienced that where you're, but for me, it was like, well, I'm too worldly for Christians. And I'm also two Christians for the world.
Yeah.
I existed, this is particularly my story. I existed in a very specific niche.
I was too political for comedy, too funny for politics.
So, you know, I'm standing in on the stage of like mega church in Atlanta, and I'm talking about how the Puritans own slaves. And I don't understand why y'all reading them so much. You know what I'm saying? and then Trayvon Martin happens.
Right.
And so it was like a niche of a niche of a niche for me. So I missed out on, it's funny, I missed out on a lot of the really big opportunities in the CCM world. Because like you said, I was too political, I was too worldly, right? And then, but since I was still on that booking agent, you know, in the general market stuff, it's staying like, is that the Christian dude? You know, until they listened. And then they're like, well, damn, he's different. You know what I'm saying? So I kind of like, I kind of rode the bench in two different areas. Just kind of somehow figured out. But I think that like, to be very candid, like the advent of Trump just essentially just blew up the world.
Yeah.
You know, it's even just from I'm saying this objectively from a Christian industry thing. He created a Grand Canyon.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking faith, I'm talking industry business.
Right.
It created a chasm to where you was either with it or against it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So because of that, there was a lot of events ended, a lot of like conferences, festivals, they died because you had to choose a side.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So at that point for me, I was like, this is an easy fix for me. Cause I'm like, I mean, you already know where I stand. You know what I'm saying? So like, and if you're telling me, even though we've spent the last 10 years together, where you know who I am, you know where I stand, that if I don't agree with you on this, we no longer family.
Right.
All right. Well, that was your choice.
But I'll tell you, man, I think that's one of the most important things about you, about what we're trying to do on this show, about Tim Ross, about it's, you know, for the longest time, I'm sure we've had really similar feelings about sometimes you just go, I wish I could just be more mainstream. Like, because I'm always
so
like, to this for that, to that for this. But in reality, I think the more divided we get, the more that we're actually finding that even though we thought we were like weirdo niche people, artists, we represent so many people who that's quietly cool. didn't think they were represented. And
I was going to say, we're more like everyone.
We are.
And that's what's carried my career.
Yes.
Is being that like, yeah, like I'm probably going to throw it back at him at the club on Saturday, but I will be at church on Sunday.
Yes.
Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, that's all of us.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I found, like you said, the more truthful I was to who I am,
yep.
one, I like the crowd now. Like, you know, yeah. I know a lot of artists that like,
whew.
They go on tour and they don't like their fans.
Right.
Because, well, you're not being true to yourself.
Yep.
Like, you know what I'm saying? You're trying to fit this thing.
Wow, yeah.
So you don't like your fans, so it sucks. You're miserable
God,
on tour.
I hit that point. I never thought of it.
Wow. Yeah.
Where I was just like, I don't think I'm like, pretentious, but I don't like this, and it was because I wasn't being authentic.
You gotta be authentic,
right? When I'm gonna attract people who think that I'm that, and I'm not that, so I can't talk to them. That's not good.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But now, like, you know, like I said, my tour guys are here. Like, yo, we'll like tweet out, hey, we're gonna be at this coffee shop, 12 o'clock. Pull up. You know what I mean? And like, just chill, have coffee, and then go do the show. And like, we're throwing out.
They're like, we're burning down the racist coffee shop.
You know what I'm saying?
No, not that one. No.
Oh, we'll be over there. We're here, prop. We got the Molotovs. Like,
oh, that was old me.
Yeah, bro. Their families are great, man. Like, yeah. But yeah, no. So yeah, I think that. So to answer your question, yes.
Yeah.
But I definitely didn't have it as bad as some of my friends.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, because I've even thought about that as like recently, right? Like what I thought was a Christian is what a lot of people in the artist space who mostly are liberal think what a Christian is. It's like George Bush, right?
Yeah.
So even identifying as a Christian, it's like, oh, does that mean they're going to think that I'm
totally
this way?
I always have to give a caveat, like, you know, because of that, since I don't come off like any of those stereotypes, when I start talking, I'm like, well, we have to remind, like, I often remind them, like, well, I just come from a different tradition. Like, I don't come from that tradition.
Yeah.
I think that's weird too. You know what
yeah.
I'm saying? Like,
yeah, yeah.
I come from a tradition that looks more like this. Granted, we got our problems. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I just come from a different tradition. And I think once you say that, like we said earlier, where I'm like, well, you, civil rights movement, those are Baptist preachers. They're pastors.
Yeah,
you know
man.
What I'm saying? So when you say that, then people go, oh, yeah.
What
yeah,
I
know, you know what I'm saying? Like,
what I always say that shuts it down, because I mean, God, I remember I was doing a Saturday night show in Austin, and when comics were like, what are you doing tomorrow? Like, do you want to come out tonight? And I was like, I'm going to church. They looked at me like I was like, oh, I'm going to like a kiddie porn carnival.
Yeah.
Like they were outraged.
Yeah.
And I just had to, and these were like, some of them were like really sweet, open-minded. It wasn't even just like the, you know, just shitty, cynical, whatever. And the second I said, hey man, I had a problem with the church too. I just followed Jesus.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to say. And Jesus had problems with the church too.
Yeah, totally.
Right? Or not the church, but Jesus had problems with like religion.
I get what you're saying. Yeah.
Haven't gotten a lot of pushback on that.
Yeah, man. You're just like, look, man, it's Texas.
Right.
And I'm like, y'all got y'all unique brand.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, I think for me, it's like coming from the West. So if I'm like, you know, it's very, you know, when we say we're going to church, like it could mean a million things. Like,
right.
But that's that granola, like West Coast to where it's like, oh, so you just guys are just gonna light sage and dance? Like,
right.
I go to a church like that too.
So you're doing mushrooms?
And I'm like, yeah, actually. No,
yeah.
You should come, bro.
Yeah
but nah. But yeah, nah, I feel you, man. Like, it's unfortunate, you know what I mean? But I think that, like, yeah, your character, your countenance, and your love, like, will always,
yeah,
it cuts through the noise.
That's,
you know?
Okay. That's great. That's
yeah.
great. I love that. All right, yeah. End it on that. Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to the show. Thank you for supporting the show. This is only because of you. We are also a niche of a niche of a niche, and a little to this for that, and a little to that for this.
Yeah.
But you guys found us, and it means the world. It's how we survive. Tell someone about the show. Obviously, rate, review, subscribe, like, all that stuff. But telling people, sending clips, if your angry atheist cousin wants to start poetry, clip that poetry part, send it to them, and then we'll get the maybe they'll stick around for the Jesus stuff at the end. That's how we survive. It's just word of mouth. We're building a community. We're building a family. So thank you guys again. You can follow me on Instagram at the Jamie Kilstein, and that's it. We'll see you next week in the back row. Peace.
Yeah.
Hi, I know you don't want to see more white noise trash on social media, so I'm going to be very quick. If you want to find out what I'm doing, what our show is doing, you can sign up for our newsletter. It is the best way to stay in touch. It's the best way to get offers and exclusive access. You can find the link below. I am done. Thank you. Goodbye.